Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver. I want to just say thank you for tuning in today. Thank you for being a part of the podcast. It is so crazy to me. I can't believe that we've been doing this for almost 10 months now. And we're getting close to 100 episodes. That's crazy. So I want to thank you for being part of the journey. If today is the first time you're listening, well, I'd encourage you to go back, check out some of the previous episodes. If you've been with me from the beginning, I want to say thank you. And I'm glad that you have chosen to stick with Learning from Smart People. My guest today is Ben Reuter. And Ben is an exercise physiologist. He is a podcaster, and he kind of straddles the line between academic and practitioner. He is a lifetime mover promotion person. He's all about the ethos that movement is a lifestyle, not just an activity. Hey, Ben, welcome to the show, man.
Rob, thanks for having me. I'm always happy to talk about movement.
Ben, you have been working on movement and making sure that movement is a lifestyle. And here's what I'm wondering about. How many people do you think are conscious about the amount of movement that they have in a day?
I'll answer that two ways. I'll say, first of all, not enough. And second of all, as we were chatting a little bit before we started recording, depending on which study you look at, depending on which government agency, which academic agency, probably 12 to 20% of people have gym memberships. And as you and I were talking, there are additional people who move, but most people, the estimate is probably as much as 70% of people don't make conscious movement every day. Now, we do have to clarify that there are some people who work heavy physical labor jobs. And, you know, I know when I worked landscaping when I was in college, I wasn't thinking about how many steps I did. But we are a nation that doesn't move as much as we should. And I think we can see that in both the healthcare costs and also the number of chronic diseases that shouldn't be happening.
So what about the advent of the smartwatch and the Fitbit that are helping keep track of our movement and helping keep track of those kind of things? Are those underutilized? Are those properly utilized? What are your thoughts on the smartwatches and the apps to keep track of movement?
I'm a gadget geek, so I'll premise it with that or start it with that. But I will say that they're tools. So for a few people, it's like, oh, this is my motivation. Can I get that award or that mark on the watch that shows me I did X amount of activity? But it's a tool. And I think it's better than not having it. But if somebody's saying, well, I can't move, I can't exercise, I can't walk because I don't have a smartwatch or I don't have an iPhone. Well, we know there's people all over the world that move without that. And there's a risk of getting focused on that. And sometimes they're wrong. My best story on that, when they first came out with step counters, I was at Auburn University and there was a professor there who was doing some research on children in the classroom. And he sent these step counters out to various classrooms to students. And he had this one classroom where there were three or four kids with their step counts were just through the roof, just well above thousands and thousands of steps above anybody else. And he looks at it and he says, you know, is there something wrong with these devices? And he collects them and there's nothing wrong with them. So he asked the kids who were using the device. It turns out these three or four boys had put the devices on the tails of their dogs and watched their dogs do it. So right. I think that's the take home message is, look, they're tools, but at the end of the day, it's each individual person saying, what can I do? And as you and I were chatting before, some of us have more limitations in movement than others, but that doesn't mean we just throw our hands up and say, well, it's not worth it. Right. The whole idea behind movement and taking care of ourselves in life is we want to be able to do whatever we want to do literally up until the day we die. And not to sound macabre, but the ideal way to die is of a massive stroke and you hit the ground doing what you love doing.
Sure. I don't think that we'll go over, you know, the list of best ways to die, but I can appreciate the sentiment of what you're talking about, in which you are doing what you love right to the end, and then it's over. Let me just say, I want to key on something that you said. You talked about smartwatches and about Fitbits being a tool, and I would view them as a tool in the same way that I would view a gym membership as a tool. Because how many people do you know, their concept of movement is, I I pay for a membership at the gym. I don't ever go, or I go, you know, once a month and it makes me feel better. But I, the tools that are available to you really come down to ultimately your own choice in how you use those tools.
I would agree with that. I like the title of your podcast, Learning from Smart People. I figure if I'm the smartest person on my podcast, I'm the dumbest person. So to build on what you've said, I interviewed a gentleman a couple of times named Don Moxley, and Don's comment, and I would concur with this, is, you know, I'm a huge fan of gyms. I think there should be a way for most people to be able to have gym memberships. And as you said, it's their onus to use it. But that's only a small part. If you're a regular gym member and you go every day, that's an hour out of your day. Your question you need to ask is, for the 14 or 15 other hours of the day, what type of movement are you doing? And, you know, if you're a mom or a dad with kids, you may be moving more than if you're somebody who just sits at a desk and does computer coding all day and then goes home and plays computer games.
Sure. What? Okay. So there's a, there's an old joke about how in our bathroom, in our home, someone changed the name of the toilet to James so that instead of going to the John first thing in the morning, everyone gets up and the first thing they do is go to the gym, which is, you know, it's something that makes you feel better. And it's something that's, it's words, but you're talking about a commitment to movement and you're talking about movement becoming a lifestyle. What do you mean that it becomes a lifestyle?
I'll give you two things, and this kind of is how I came up or how I made the decision that I wanted to do the podcast and made this my ethos. The first thing was 6 or 7 years ago, I began to have a series of retinal problems in one eye. I will note that I was told from the time I was young, look, your eye is very nearsighted. At some point, you're going to detach a retina, and these are the signs and symptoms. And, you know, it just kind of went over my head. And long about 2013 or 2014, I'm out walking my dogs and all of a sudden there's these black lines in my vision of my one eye. And I'm going, there must be something in my hat. There wasn't something in my hat. It was a torn retina. And over the past, up until 2017, numerous detached retinas or torn retinas, 9+ surgeries, 15+ procedures. Now, I will note the physician who was doing the work was excellent, and these were all tears in different places. So what was happening is it just turned into a physics problem because the eye was so nearsighted, the retina was very, very thin, and it's just kind of figuring out what it was. So there were periods of time where I couldn't move, things that I took for granted, you know, walking, running, riding my bicycle. You know, I couldn't do it because some of the recovery is you lie on your on a certain position so the retinal can repair. Or I still remember times where my surgeon would say, look, you can walk. I don't want you biking or running because if you fall off the bike or the pounding, that'll be a problem. So that kind of set vision in my mind. It's like, you know, movement really is part of my life and I'm just happier. I'm less stressed. I'm a better person to be around if I can get regular movement. Notice this, no way have I mentioned going to the gym. And then around 2015, in the middle of this whole thing, I'm a big dog person. One of my Labradors was diagnosed with idiopathic epilepsy.
Okay.
So unfortunately, coming up in April, it'll be 2 years since I lost her, but she survived for 4 years. By the time she ended, she was on 8 or 9 different medicines to try to control these seizures. And I remember asking the neurologist for her. Yeah, my dog had a neurologist. And I said, you know, what can I do with her? And she said, you can do whatever you want if she wants to do it. And I knew she liked to be in the woods. She liked to walk. So it was kind of along the same time that I was able to start adding activity in as the eye problems started to dissipate. I said, okay, I'm going to make a commitment to go to the park, to the woods, to my property, to walk with her as much as she wants to do most days of the week. And she had checkups every 3 or 4 months. She had numerous times in the dog emergency room because she sees 2 or 3 times in a row. And I remember the neurologist saying after about a year, I don't know what you're doing with this dog, but whatever you're doing, keep doing it because she's calm. She's a healthy weight. She's happy when she comes in here. And it's about that time I realized it's like, you know, this is something that's important for so many people and animals. You know, she was literally the day that she had seizures that she didn't come out to, that day we were able to go for a 30-minute walk. So on the one hand, you know, I still think about her and, you know, I still get a little choked up when I see pictures of her. But on the other hand, I know she had a phenomenal life. And the realization is there's all kinds of things we can't control. but we can control our quality of life and taking care of our health and making sure that within our own realm, as much movement as we can do, not exercise, but movement, exercise is important too. It can enhance our quality of life and probably the length of our life.
Okay. So tell me then, what is, you differentiated between movement and exercise. What are you defining as movement? Because there's movement with me reaching over to pick up the clicker to watch TV. There's movement of me picking up the fork to feed my face. Tell me what your definition is of movement as it's applying to building a lifestyle.
Great question. And I'll answer that first by telling you what the recommendations for exercise for Americans are. And I think you'll appreciate how movement can differ from that. So the general recommendation is people should exercise 3 to 5 times a week, cardiovascularly, for a total of 150 to 240 minutes. And they should engage in at least 2 resistance training exercises, resistance training bouts or weight training bouts, where they're doing 8 to 12 different exercises.
Okay.
So automatically we know, and not to single you out, but you told me that you were a quadriplegic. We know you can't do that.
Right.
So if we're set, it would be very easy to say, well, you know, Rob can't exercise, but Rob can move. You know, there are things you can do, as we were talking beforehand. So I think before we know the majority of people aren't doing those sorts of things. They aren't going to the gym. We were discussing people that we knew who weren't doing it before we started recording. The first step that we want to do is we want to make something actionable or easy for people to do. So if I tell you, or I tell your wife, or I tell my girlfriend, you need to go to the gym 3 days a week for cardiovascular training, to walk on the treadmill or use the Stairmaster, and you need to go and lift weights twice a week.
Yeah.
Already the bar is super, super high. We'd love to have that.
Sure.
But on the other hand, if we can say, hey, you know, I'd like you to walk around the block, or I'd like you to roll around the block and experience time in the outdoors, and just do it for 10 minutes once or twice a week. Just make a commitment that once or twice a week, you're going to do that.
Right.
You start from there.
Okay. This is kind of off topic maybe, but what do you think about the power of like partners and accountability partners, or someone that is helping you to reach those movement goals? Because, for example, we talked about smartwatches, and my 2 daughters have smartwatches. My wife's got one. Our friend has one, and they have formed a little group, and it's all about who gets to close their exercise rings, or they're closing their rings, and it's amongst themselves. They have a certain amount of accountability. Is this something that is helpful? Is it something that's not necessary? What are your thoughts about that?
It can be helpful or it can be hurtful. We all know that for some people, it just becomes this overly competitive thing. I have to beat Rob. And if I don't beat Rob, my entire self-esteem is ruined because of that. And there are people out there, you've probably have friends. It's like, you don't want to play a board game with them because you know, if they beat you in the board game, it's going to be a miserable experience until you can beat them.
Sure.
But there are many people, and this is where some of these fitness facilities, where there are group classes, the community can be beneficial. I've got a friend of mine from college who tends to meet somebody at 5:30 every morning to take a walk, because it's 2 women. So that's what they can do. What I mentioned with my dog, she was my accountability partner, because I can tell you, the days when there's lots of snow on the ground and the weather isn't good, she still wanted to go out.
Right.
And if you've got somebody who's got similar goals that you have, you know, if your wife and one of your daughters is like, look, you know, we're going to walk every day. And even if we don't live near each other, you know, this is when we're going to have our 30-minute phone call and talk every day. I think it can be a phenomenal thing for somebody to say, hey, you know, Rob, where were you today? Or it's like, I tried to call you.
Right. What you're saying though, makes a lot of sense. It's not necessarily a competition. It is, it's a collaboration where we're working together for a common purpose, not working against each other. And I think you've said it well. Of course, you know, for somebody like me, if you're going to bother to play the game, why not try and win? However, in this particular instance, the winning is not accumulating more steps. The winning is actually improving your health. And in that way, everybody who plays wins the game. Does that make sense to you?
It makes 100% sense. I mean, obviously, I've done my share of triathlons, running races, et cetera. But the most important thing about doing all this movement that I do is when I go to the doctor and they look at my blood pressure, or they look at my weight or things like that. One of the things that was relayed to me, and I can't remember who it was, but you know, we always hear when people get sick, and I think the perfect example, we talk about COVID. I mean, it's out there. We all know somebody who's had it, or multiple people have had it, or we might've had it. And if you look at all the research that's out there, they say, look, the people who are most at risk are people who have other comorbidities. They're overweight, they smoke, you know, they have cardiovascular problems. Some of these things we can't control. You know, if you were given bad genetics and mom and dad had cardiovascular disease, and you're just one of those people at the risk factor that you're going to produce lots of cholesterol, or you're going to get lots of cholesterol deposits, you know, boy, life sucks because you got the bad end of the genes there. But there are other things that we can control. And, you know, as we mentioned at the beginning, the idea is to be able to do as much as you can that you want to do. So you don't have to say, you know, boy, can we go to the beach? Well, I don't want to go to the beach because whatever the reason is. Right. So I think I may have gotten off on a tangent, but hopefully I answered it.
No, let me just put it this way, that there are things that happen in our lives that are beyond our control. Okay. And you talked about genetics. For me, it's a spinal cord injury, right? I didn't sign up for this. It was in some ways something that happened beyond my control. But what I can control, what I can handle, is how I operate within those parameters. So you're saying, you know, people that have been, I don't want to say this, you know, too tritely, but people that are swimming in the shallow end of the gene pool, when it comes to cardiovascular issues, it's a choice for them to say, okay, I have propensities this way, I have tendencies this way, I have a risk factor for this. How do I handle my life in a way that is aware of those risk factors, but also in which I take control of it? Because, you know, at the end of the day, you're only responsible for the things that you can actually control.
I wouldn't say it's trite. I mean, on the one hand, it sounds trite. On the other hand, it isn't trite. But it's also incredibly difficult. I mean, you know, one of the things with my podcast, I've had the opportunity to interview people in other countries. And the great thing that we always talk about, because we are in the movement realm, is, and having been to other countries, the two things that people from other countries notice about Americans are, number one, how we have a tendency to potentially be more overweight than other populations. But number two, and this is across the board, how do you guys eat so much food? Your food servings are huge. And let's face it, you know, whatever your treat is, if you like Prandtl's burnt almond tort, you know,
right,
it's much more difficult to go in and order one of the little 2x2 squares as opposed to going in and saying, I'll order the whole thing. And 2 days later, that whole tort is gone. So on the one hand, it's really trite to say, well, you can control it. Because, I mean, there's huge social issues, economic issues, other things. But on the other hand, as I was talking about just taking a walk, start with simple things that you can control, or start with a simple, what's the one thing that you can control? And if you get that under control, maybe you can go to the next. And the big thing that I think is vastly underplayed is sometimes you need help, whether it's an accountability partner or it's a professional who can look at you and say, well, you know, this is what we can do. This is what can help you. As an example for that, when I first started coming back and moving more after all my eye surgeries, I kept getting hurt. And a friend of mine and a colleague of mine who I was seeing for these injuries said to me one day, he says, Ben, why are you trying to exercise like it's 2012? You had 3 or 4 years where you weren't as active. You need to build it back up. I was like, the light bulb went on. It's like, oh, so I probably shouldn't try to go out and run 15 miles when I haven't done that in 4 or 5 years. And it was like that one, I mean, he was probably saying it because he was a little irritated at seeing me again for yet another musculoskeletal injury. But it was that one thing that he says, like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So accountability partners, things that you can control, you know, professional people, if you need it, people who are in the field who can help you. Sometimes just talking it out for somebody who doesn't love you or doesn't like you, who can look at it objectively and say, look, you know, Rob, this is the way it is. You've got bad genetics, but here are the positive sides, or here are some tools for you to deal with it.
Yeah. So how do you handle the thing where, like, you don't get, you don't want to be labeled like a fitness junkie or a fitness nut or one of those, you know, movement crazy people. How do you handle kind of that idea of being seen as what you're doing becoming more normal and becoming more mainstream as to being seen as like a fringe element?
Well, I think the first thing is, I'm probably unusual in this, in that, people I've met after college have said, oh, you've always done what you wanted to do. You know, to me, if it's snowing out and I want to go move, I'm going to do it because I just enjoy that. But I think, the way to make it more normal is twofold. Well, threefold. First of all, be a role model and don't say, oh my God, you didn't go out and take a 2-hour bike ride today. What are you, some kind of loser?
Right.
You know, so you are a positive role model saying, look, this is something that's norm. I've got friends with kids who grew up being active with their kids, and it's just normal for their kids to be active. You know, notice I'm not saying exercising, I'm saying be active.
Right.
And it's also the second thing is I'm hoping my podcasts, by interviewing people, and here in the Pittsburgh area, we do a 1-minute movement tip and lifestyle hacks, which we'll talk about a little bit later, I think.
Sure.
And then also just being on podcasts like this, because your field and my field are vastly different, except at the end of the day, we're both trying to educate people. We're also both trying to pass messages across and saying, look, these are some things that can enhance the quality of your life. So it's an uphill battle, but it's also something I'm excited about it. And I believe in it. I mean, I practice what I preach.
Yeah. Well, okay. And one of the things that is really important to me, though, is in this era of lockdowns and of COVID-19 and of working from home and of schooling from home and of all of this stuff where people are basically within the confines of the four walls of their living space, how do we, one of the things that I wanted to have you on for was because how do we make sure that we're getting that motion in there, getting the activity in there that we would have missed, you know, just even the small things when you're working in an office and you have to walk from the parking garage into the office building. Now you walk from the kitchen into your home office and you know the movement that you're having is cut way down. And so that's where I thought this is really important, especially in the era of COVID and a pandemic.
That's a great point. I think for a couple of things, I think the first thing is to be aware of your actions or what you do. You know, are you somebody who consciously makes an effort to move? So if you're somebody who makes an effort to move, if you're somebody who, for example, went to the gym on a regular basis, and then they said, okay, you can't do this. I mean, we saw this in the media. We saw this on social media. What do you do? And there was a run on various types of weight facilities and weights, cardiovascular equipment, you know, Peloton bikes took off. So I think the first thing to say is like, okay, what can I do that's under my control? So the first thing is if you have internet, I recognize there are some people who don't have internet, but if you have internet, there are all types of classes, many of them free for movement. There are a number of personal trainers who have switched to or increased in doing virtual using Zoom or other things to train their clients one-on-one. The gentleman I mentioned who said to me, you know, Ben, you can't you can't do this activity that you did 4 years ago. You have to build up to it. He's in the medical profession. He's a chiropractor and an athletic trainer. He adapted to virtual. The other thing is look at what you can do at home. People often say, you know, well, what do I do at home if I don't have the gym? There's a suspension trainer device called the TRX or other suspension trainers. I actually have one hanging in my living room. I know I'm a little bit unusual. I've had people come over and they actually end up putting their feet in it when they're sitting on the sofa, but you know, a suspension trainer, there's actually a Facebook group called Convict Conditioning. You know, the name is kind of weird, but it's all about doing body weight exercises in a confined space. So there are ways. And again, I don't mean to make this trite, but sometimes people might need help. They might need to reach out to a fitness professional. And I would say if they reach out to a fitness professional, one of the great things that I think is underutilized with fitness professionals is not to say, hey, Rob, I need to see you twice a week or three times a week, whether it's virtual or face-to-face, and bill you big bucks. but saying, hey, you know, let's do two or three sessions where I can show you some things that you can do, help you out. And then if you've got questions, this is people that I've worked with in the past in the fitness and the movement field. You know, one of the best people, the people I have the most respect for, are the ones who say, hey, you know, let me know what you want to do going forward, rather than hard selling you. So use the tools that are available and don't be afraid to reach out to, you know, the facilities that you've been to. I know that in some places facilities actually rented out, you know, dumbbells and barbells to their clients so they could continue to use them. So it is more difficult, but as you and I were chatting, I forget if it was before or after we recorded, everybody has different difficulties, different stresses. And in the whole scheme of things, you can maintain a movement activity if it's important to you.
Yeah. So just as we wrap up this interview, I'm thinking, can you give me some ideas? Everybody's got to find what works for them. So you're talking about going for a walk. I know that like my daughter downloads a bunch of YouTube yoga videos in which they're doing stretching. And can you give me just a quick, like maybe 5 or 6 different ways in which you can get some movement in and make it part of your life that may be just a little bit different and that are things that may appeal to different personalities and different lifestyles?
Sure. The first one is housework. Clean your house or apartment. I mean, I know that sounds kind of silly, but if you clean your house or apartment, that can do that. There are YouTube videos out there for people who maybe are elderly or people who are quadriplegics or paraplegics, where you do exercise in the chair. So there are things like that. Taking a walk, gardening. We're getting close to gardening season. You know, home projects. One of the things that I did over the pandemic, you know, because I'm fortunate, I live a little bit south of Pittsburgh. The local parks were open. I built a couple of chairs. I never built the Adirondack chairs before. I built a workbench, you know, thing. I cleaned my garage. And so that's my proud moment, that and building a cat condo. I cleaned my garage. And over the course of a day of cleaning my garage, I actually had my step counter on and I actually walked about 2.5 miles. So think about what you do, you know, if you've got grandchildren, go for a walk with your grandchildren, make it so that moving, you know, rather than the norm being, okay, it's 7 o'clock at night, let's flop down in front of the TV and watch Jeopardy. Say, okay, if you do that, maybe your first step is, okay, every time the commercial comes up, we're all going to stand up and we're all going to balance on one leg and see who can do it the longest. So a baby step like that.
I love it. Hey, listen, Ben, thank you so much for sharing today. This has been a very interesting conversation. You've given us a lot to think about. If people are looking to get a hold of you, you mentioned about your 1 minute movement lifestyle hack. If they're looking to find that, if they're looking to find more about what you're doing, where can they find you?
Well, we do two podcasts, FitLab PGH and Moving to Live. But the easiest way to find both of them is on social media, specifically Instagram. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday on FITLABPGH, we do 1 minute movement tip lifestyle hack videos. We've been doing this since 2017. Also, when we put out new FitLab Pittsburgh or Moving to Live podcasts, we advertise it on that. And if they have questions about this or they want to get in touch with me, FITLABPGH@gmail.com. We're all about promoting movement, making the norm, not the abnorm, and making movement a lifestyle, not just an activity.
I love it. This has been fantastic. I will put all of that information down in the show notes so that people can find you and connect with you and follow you and they can learn from you. So fantastic. We are ready for 3 questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for this?
Tentatively, yes.
All right. What is your favorite thing about your career?
My favorite thing, I would say my doctoral advisor said it's like playing every day, but my favorite thing is the realization that no matter how much I know, I don't know anything. So I know less now at 53 than I knew when I was 33.
You know, that is actually part of the reason that we're learning from smart people is the understanding that I may fill my brain with knowledge, but there are always people that I can learn from. So I love that answer. What are the 2 most frequently listened to radio stations, either in your home, in your vehicle, or on your mobile device?
I have to confess, since I found podcasts and Spotify, I haven't listened to terrestrial radio or even Sirius XM. So I would say my two favorite things to listen to on Sirius, that you can do a weekly play where each week you get, I think, 15 or 20 new songs. So that's a way that I can discover new music. And then it seems almost every time I interview somebody on a podcast, they recommend another podcast that I add to my catch. And sometimes it's maybe a podcast that's not in my interest field or my area, and I scroll down, it's like, ooh, the guest. I was mentioning with yours, I'm partway through listening to the lady who's talking about college costs. And as somebody who's in higher education and somebody who's still paying student loans off, I'm very interested in that.
Yeah, Bonnie Burkett, she was fantastic, and I got her information just as my kids were heading into college, which is just kind of a crazy thing. Last thing, and that is, you are here in the greater Pittsburgh area. What is either the regional food or a regional, what is the food of choice that you say this is a classic Pittsburgh thing?
Is this something I eat, or something that if I mention to people that I'm in the Pittsburgh area, they say, "Oh, have you tried?"
Either one, your choice.
I would say, obviously, anybody who knows anything about Pittsburgh, I'm not a big fan of it myself, but is Primanti Brothers.
Okay.
I would say the second, and I am a big fan, is the Prandtl's Burnt Almond Tort.
Yeah.
But what I'm the biggest fan of, as far as, I'm a big fan of, obviously, of healthy foods. I make maple syrup every spring. We've actually made some so far this year. And a second part answer, a shout out to a local business that I think does a great job, Pittsburgher Highland Farms, where I buy my grass-fed beef from. I think it's a really cool company, and I love supporting a local business that, they practice what they preach.
That's awesome. I will see if I can look them up and put a link to them in the show notes as well. Hey, Ben Reuter, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate your willingness to share. For all my listeners, I appreciate you being with me today. I think it's been a learning experience. I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.